Hagim Uzmanim, with the sun. So we are ready to today's daf brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, which is daf Mem Dalet. And we're going to be finding some real surprises because, as it turns out, this entire perek, which actually is titled Hakol Leitzli Vimtov, is there to tell us the dinim of chalitza and its relationship with yibum. And most importantly, it focused on what the status is of the chalitza. We're going to have some surprises today when it turns out that what we've been assuming all along, this whole idea of achot chalitzato and all of these mityabemes, she can't be, but she is chalitza, it turns out that not all of the Tanoim agree to that, and that there's even a tzad to say that the issues of the chalutza are the Araisa issues, not the Rabbonins, and that we're going to be getting to in a moment. But first, let's take a little bit of a detour into the relationship between the chalutza and the yibum. Now, this Mishnah is a very primal Mishnah, because basically all of these dinim we've been taking for granted since the beginning of the Masechet. We never, ever got to the Mishnah or the Gemara that defines the Limudim that we keep quoting. And we've been talking about these Limudim. How do we know that you can only take one? How do we know that if you give Yibum to one, that the other one is Petura? How do we know that you can only do one Chalitza to a Bayit, that you could do only one Yibum to a Bayit? And how do we know that after doing chalitza, you're going to pass the bayit for yibum, and so on and so forth? These are things that we always took for granted, but never looked to find the roots of these halachas. So at last, we've come to a Mishnah that attempts to give us a quick understanding of the relationship between the chalitza and yibum, which all along, of course, has been very important in this parak particularly, where we've got cases of where you might think you could be Chalitz one, do Yibum to another, where it's possible to have a Chalitza, but not possible to have a Yibum. Let's look into this once and for all and find out. So first of all, we have sort of a play on the cases of the previous Mishnahs. We've got all these Mishnahs about, you know, Arba Achim, Shnaimim, this way. That's like so common, right? So we've got the Arba Achim sets, and we've got the Shlosha Achim sets, you know, the famous Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and what was Levi married to and all this. So now the Mishnah is going to do a little game with us. Let's say that we've got four brothers that are married to four different women, and they're not related to each other. So who cares? Okay. Like, all right, so what is she going to tell me now? I'm going to tell you that if all four of them die, now obviously, there's something wrong over here, because if there's really only four brothers and all four of them die, how are we talking to anybody about doing Yibum or Chalitza? So therefore, we already know that the Mishnah is playing games. It's not talking about that the sum total of cases over here is that there's four brothers. It's saying in a large family of brothers, let's say you would have four brothers. Why say four brothers? I mean, 10 brothers, three brothers. I mean, okay. But if you've got four brothers for some reason, it turns out that there's a fascinating reason to talk about four brothers particularly, which is a shock. But anyway, we've got four separate brothers. So then one of the surviving brothers, if he wants to, he could take all four of them. Because remember that all of the limitations that we've been talking about until now were limitations only within the same bayit, right? Bayit hu echadu boneh means within the bayit, that is to say, the wife, right? Beiti is ishti, as Rabbi Yochanan used to say. So one bayit of a single brother, there's no relationship between different brothers batim. So therefore, if he wants to, he can go ahead and he can take all four of these women. Now, that's not to be confused with the cases that we had where there's more than one woman that he is mechuyev to take from the same bayit, and let's say a brother married or he's related to one. All of that is a relationship of zika. And we even had a case where two sisters will fall together in zika, and that would make them zakuka to the same guy, yes. But this is very important to note that separate zikot, to separate batim of yibum does not create an iser of bayit echad u'bonev, eino bonev shnei batim. So that's one important thing that the Mishnah is coming to tell me. So one of the brothers, any one of the surviving brothers, if he wishes, could take all four of these women. So im ratzar gadol shebem liyabem et kulam, harishut biyado. Now, let's talk about another fundamental thing that we've taken for granted and we think is childishly obvious, that if one brother, on the other hand, is married to two women, so then if he dies, the halacha is that either the bia, which would be the yibum, or the chalitza of either of those women paters the other woman, it's poteret tzarata, completely. And we don't say that you need to do, well, if you're only going to do one yibum, then you still have to do chalitza to the other one. No. It's actually each one of them, either or, is able to take away the zika from the entire bayit. Now, what if one of them was kshera lekuhuna, and one of them is pasul lekuhuna anyway, for other reasons? Maybe she was a grusha and had been married to another guy before she married the brother. So then, even though you are not a kohen, let us say the yavam is not a kohen, if you're going to do the chalitza, then do the chalitza to the one who was anyway psula lekuhuna because let's say she was a divorcee. That makes sense. But don't do the chalitza to the one who was ksheir lekuhuna. Why? So remember, this was the beautiful limud that we had before. Kan shana rebi lo yishpoch adam mei boro. Don't throw out your dishwasher, your dishwater, if your neighbor needs it. Okay. That goes on dishwashers too, by the way. People do that all the time. I got an old dishwasher, I'll throw it out. And maybe the neighbor who couldn't afford a dishwasher, what are you throwing it out for? First, put a note on the community bulletin board, right? On your WhatsApp. Anybody need a free dishwasher? Okay, this is all a din in the Mishnah. So that means that WhatsApp is already merumas in the Torah Shebaal Peh, obviously. So, in that case, if you're going to do yibum, you can be miyabe, maybe either one, of course. If you happen to like one above the other, that's not nogea anymore. But if you're going to pasul one for the kuna by giving her chalitza, do not pasul a woman who is currently kosher to a kohen. That's just cruel. For what reason? Okay, says the Gemara, now look. I mean, something's messed up with the Mishnah. If there are really only four brothers, and until now, that's what we've been talking about, right? Whenever we start up a case, four brothers, so it always goes like this. Two of them are married to two sisters, and they die. And then there's two brothers left. But over here, if you've got all four brothers dying and there's no brothers left, there's not really much point in discussing the Mishnah, because who are we talking to? So obviously, arbach in sakadaita, you can't really mean those words, because then the Mishnah is absurd. So what you meant was, arba me'achin, four out of a family of brothers were married. That's all you're saying. Four were married, and all four that married died, which certainly is a statistical evidence that marriage is not good for you, apparently. Anyway, so the ones who were married all died, and now you've got these other brothers, and one of them wants to marry all of them. Says the Gemara, the Mishnah says he can if he wants to, but wait a minute. Isn't there a halacha that the zekenim are supposed to tell him an etza tova? You're telling me that it's a good idea to marry four women? Are you nuts? What could the Mishnah possibly be saying when it says harashut biyado? Vishavkile? The Bezdin's going to let him do something stupid? I mean, forget about the question, is it mutter? That's not the issue. The issue is that there's a special halacha, remember, by Chalitza, where it says, v'korulo zikne iro, that means that the Bezdin is responsible to make certain that he will do Chalitza if he refuses to do Yibam, and that they will tell him an Eitza Teva that is good for him, because it says they should speak to him, the Dibruelav. What are you going to speak to him about? There's nothing to speak to him about. Speak to him about means have a little conference, you know, some intimate discussions. What are they going to talk to him about? So from there, as it says in the Braita, beautiful halacha, that v'korulo zikne iro, first of all, means that there is a chiv on the Bezdin, which is that the Bezdin should show personal interest in the outcome of this relationship. Now, that, of course, is a beautiful halacha that fits with the dinim and the conceptual dinim of Yibum Bichlal. Because remember that we saw this back in the beautiful case of Yibum that's mentioned in the Torah in Megillas Rus, where over there we have the entire city feeling involved in what's going on, right? And that's the point. So they all come together, and the pasuk is merambes on this when it says that everybody's supposed to say chalutza now, chalutza now. That means that Yibum and chalitza are at least a local, if not a national, but at least a local concern of everybody. And that's sha'ar mikomo. To be making the nefesh hamet is, at the very least, a social issue. Is it not? It's not a personal issue. Because we're talking about his mokan. And remarkably, the way that the Torah brings out the continued connection on a personal level of the local bezdin in the outcome of this relationship is the fact that it says, v'karulo ziknei iro. What is that supposed to mean, v'karulo ziknei iro? If the Torah would have just said, v'dibrei lav ziknei iro, would we not understand that Besdin always has a process by which they can issue a summons? Every Besdin can issue a summons. We don't say every single time that we have a court case, v'karulo, that's absurd. If somebody is suing someone, then the court issues a summons. Does it say anywhere that they have to issue a summons? So therefore, the ideal of yir v'karulo must incredibly mean they should not issue a summons, but they should call him directly themselves. That's amazing. Okay, so that means that the Yovam has to immediately feel that he is involved in something that is beyond his personal business. That's crazy. Wild. So, hein velo shlucham, they don't issue a summons with a shliach. And then v'dibru elav. So what kind of conversation are they going to have with him? I mean, if the halacha is that Yibum is supposed to come before chalitza, there's no conversation. Just tell him, look, the Torah gave you a mitzvah of Yibum. You're going to do your mitzvah or not, you bum. Okay, that's all. Instead, it says v'dibru elav, have a conversation. What's the conversation about? Oh, so you see from here that the input into the relationship of the Yavam and the Yavama is indeed an input into relationship, not simply into the normal way in which Besdin's business is, make sure people are mekayim their mitzvahs. No, that's not the point. It means, since Yibum is a very strange mitzvah, in which the Torah leaves it up to you and the situation, about whether you're going to do Yibum or you're going to do Chalitza. Now, then that means that in this context, where the Besdin is calling him, they're going to be talking to him about that thing, right? And that means that they're going to be giving him advice. Look, it's not a good idea for you to be doing Yibum for this girl. I mean, after all, you're 83 years old, and this girl is 18. I don't think that's a very good match, you know? Or maybe vice versa. I don't know. But v'dibrui lav means malamech imesino etzah genetlo, which, by the way, was a very important part of that Yibum that is mentioned in Megillas Rus. The reason that Rus was told by Naomi to start making out with her prospective Yavam, which is weird. I mean, why can't you just talk to him? Why do you have to sit there and do what she did? I mean, that's like outrageous, isn't it? But it's not, you see, because you can't talk to him because he really was 80 years old. So I mean, like, what's this girl coming along and suggesting to an 80-year-old that he should do Yibum? I mean, he's going to say, look, you know, it's not a good idea because relationships like that don't work, you know. So therefore, the whole thing needed to be an expression of her own personal interest in the relationship. So it's mamish nogea this gemara. So the Besdin is supposed to tell him, suppose he's a young man and she's an old lady, or vice versa, he's an old man and she's a child. So we say to him, listen, I mean, what are you, an 80-year-old, going along and taking this little girl? I mean, you know, it's not going to work out very well. And, or vice versa. Malacha, what's, you're a young man, what are you taking an old woman for, and you're going to be frustrated with her, and so it's just too different, and the needs are so different, and so on. Go after some woman who's your own age, you know. Are you going to have itzaras if you do this? Because after all, sexual relations are part of the soothing of the interrelationship of men and women, which is so complicated anyway. So if you're not sexually matched and you're not psychologically matched, so what's the point? Don't do that. Now, the reason I stressed sexually matched is because the Gemara here is going to explain that that's the basis of four brothers, believe it or not. But we're going to get to it in this roundabout way. So why don't we tell somebody it ain't too bright to get four women into your home? Okay, so why don't we tell him that? So why does the Mishnah say? So our first concern over here is that how in the world are you going to get four copies of a credit card to give to four women to bankrupt you? That's the question that we understand, right? Says the Gemara, well, we're talking over here where the guy is rich and he's got four credit cards and he lets them go to town on his credit cards and it doesn't bother him. So he's not going to be bringing machlokas into his home. Oh, okay, says the Gemara. So, I mean, if it's all a function of the case, so why do we say four? I mean, 100. Does he have 100 credit cards? Well, let him give a credit card to each one. I mean, four seems very arbitrary, even though it's a cute takeoff on the other Mishnayos where we had four. But, I mean, it's very misleading. So, afilu tu vanami. Ah, at last we get to the main issue. The main issue is this. A woman generally is going to have a period every month, right? Now, if that's the case, you need to be able to give her some sexual attention once a month, at least, because that is going to be the time that she's chozeres from her tefillah and where she desires that attention. But you see, if we're talking about the relationship to a Talmud Chacham, and a Talmud Chacham, asher priyo yitain bi'ito, means that he is supposed to have relations once a week, which that is bi'ito, ne'erev Shabbat, le'erev Shabbat. So now, if he takes four women, so then he can afford to give each one of them their attention once a month, which is great, because then he's not bringing this kitata, the toch beito. But if he takes more than four, then she may end up not even becoming attended to, which is tashmish, to be bishamish, to care for her once a month. And that could lead indeed to kitata. That could be problematic. Therefore, that's why I say before, sexually matched. If you bring in more than four women, so then you're going to be having problems because there's going to be one of these women is going to get left out of your cycle, and that's not a good idea. So therefore, the Bezdin will tell you the most you can take is four if you can easily afford it. If you can't afford it, then don't take any. Take whichever one is not going to bring kitata. And the Mishnah is coming to tell me that that is an objective kitata, that you're not going to be able to provide for the attention necessary for each woman, then you're introducing kitata. Now, the question is, this seems a little bit unfair. In other words, if we're talking about the inyan of ona, and we measure ona by the activities of the husband, right? So it's if he's a po'el, so then he's supposed to have X amount of sex a month. If he's a Talmud Chacham, he's supposed to have Y. If he's a sailor and he goes away for 6 months at a time, then he has Z. Whatever. So now you're going to tell me that that is distributed between his wives? I mean, if he wants to take another wife, so then let him exert himself more. I mean, that's not fair. I thought it's onata lo yigara. What all of a sudden is it becoming dependent on him? I mean, so let her say, listen here, what kind of business is this? I thought I'm marrying a guy. Now it turns out I'm marrying a quarter of a guy. I mean, this is not what I got into, you know? So this is the question. Is this halacha a specific din in Yibum? Now that's how the Mukhe Yosef learns. The Mukhe Yosef's famous shita is that this idea of splitting up your sexual activity between women is unfair, and you can't do that. You owe every woman whatever your full attention would be, depending on what you are. What are we going to talk about? A sailor's got four wives. He sees each one of them once every 2 years because his normal ona is 6 months. I mean, does this make sense? Says the Mukhe Yosef. So therefore, What we're talking about over here is since Isha, hiknatalo min hashamayim. So look, you know, I mean, this fell to me from the sky. I mean, I wasn't planning on like doubling my activities or quadrupling my activities, but the Torah says the oldest brother has got the mitzvah of Yibam. So I had all these four women here. Oh gosh, what a mess. All right. So fine. So at least the Torah leaves me to at least split my karkas between them, you know. Okay. So that is a unique case, but in a normal case where somebody has more than one wife, so then he would have to give every wife her attention. However, the Rambam says beferish, that's not the case. And based on this Gemara, he says that we will always distribute your energies among the number of women that you have. And it's not a din particularly in Yibam. And Allah Kalamaisa, that's the way that the Shulchan Aruch paskins. And because of that paskins, that it's bichlal, a person shouldn't have more than four wives because of this issue, that it's not limited specifically to the din of Yibam. Okay. So therefore, says the Gemara, Eitzatova Kamashbalan, it's as many as four, yes, but more than four, not, because this way, each one should be able to have attention once a month, and that is normal for a woman to need that attention once a month after a period. Okay, then let's move on. We've taken for granted that if someone was married to two women, and then he dies. So then we took for granted. How do we know that? How do we know that we look at the bayit as a whole instead of looking at each one of those women and determining what is necessary in order to allow her to get married? I mean, I don't understand. If a guy has two wives, I mean, let me ask something. Guy has two wives and he's sick of two wives and he gives one of them a get. Would you say, well, you gave a get to one, that get is good enough for the other? You wouldn't think that, would you? So over here, the guy has two wives. The Torah was Mechayev Yibam. Okay, so you're going to say, well, you know, I'll give one of them the chalitza, which you said is very similar to a get. I'll give one of them a chalitza and then kiss them both goodbye. Well, maybe not kiss them at that point, but wave to them both goodbye, right? I mean, that's crazy. Why would you get such an idea? Isn't that the exact opposite of the way that we started the parak with understanding that the idea of chalitza relates specifically to the chalitza, to the gerushin? So nobody would think anything so ridiculous when it comes to gerushin. I don't need a pussy to tell me that the gerushin of one doesn't help for the other. Why would it? So over here, when it comes to a bayit, why would it? Where do you get such a crazy idea from? And we've been taking all of this for granted, maybe because of all of the wine that Rene is giving out this morning. I don't know, but we've definitely been taking it for granted. Now, if you want to watch the effects, watch Barnea now. Go for it, Barnea. There we go. Oh, look at this. With each additional gulp, we're going to have more Barnea neighborhoods, probably.
That's why I'm drinking Mer Loi.
Ah, I hear you. Okay, so now, how do you get this idea? Why would we not have to give Yibam to both of them? Like, would you come up with the idea that one of them? Amar Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Reb Yochanan. Well, this is the pasuk we've been relying on all along. It says in the Torah, Asher lo yivne et beit achiv. Beit achiv. Beit achiv means one bayit. So that whole idea is, at the moment that we're learning, we learn all of this out from Chalitza, mind you, not from Yibam. Which is why this perek of Achaylets Liyavimto is the shirish of all of these dinim, right? Not only about Achot Chalutzato, and whether she's similar to a Grusha, and whether there's an Isra on her, whether that Isra is considered to be like an Erva, does it pater? Those were the things that were the ostensible focus of the perek. Now it turns out, and this is normal, remember, for Rebbe Seder of the Mishnah, is that as we go into further and further into a sugya, we come closer and closer to the roots of the sugya instead of vice versa. So and I pointed out to you, this is exactly how nature works. We never get to the roots. We always deal with issues that are expressions of something. We always take for granted some kind of simple root. And then all of a sudden we're left with a shock. What? So that we have to now re-examine what we thought the roots were. And this keeps happening. And every time That's the idea of a hora. Every time we have to reconceptualize. And we never start off with knowing what the heck the roots are. We just take for granted that this is a given. Every baby ends up taking for granted not to get too close to the edge of the bed because it hurt last time when their head hit the floor, right? Okay, so that's a fairly easy lesson to learn. So therefore, the baby is now a bucky in gravity. Not quite. Okay. So it may take some thousands of years of additional kinds of experiments, data, and hitting your head on the spaceship until you figure out the next step in gravity and so on and so forth. Okay, the same thing is true of this way that Rebbe created the Mishnah. The Seder is always surprisingly to go from the details to the underlying roots. So there's nothing unusual about this. So even though we started off our perek by the focus on the relationship of chalitza to gerushin in terms of the way it looks, there's deeper issues involved. So why indeed is chalitza so different than gerushin is really what bothers us. Where do we, mute. So why, shmoo. So why indeed do we not do to both wives what we would need to do one? So Rav Chaim Bar Abba says, look, it says in the Torah, in the process of chalitza, right? Thus shall be done to the man who refuses to build his brother's bayit. Now that means he only had the option of building one bayit, beit achiv ubonet. So bayit achad ubonet, ve'eino bonet shnei batim. So now that means that we understand that the concept of the idea of a bayit is that it is the wife, the bayit, not the home as a whole, but the bayit that he's dealing with. And that is the woman that's in front of him. So he cannot build two batim out of the women that his brother left. Okay, I understand that. Fine. So agreed, you can't build two. But, I mean, you should certainly need to do chalitza, right? I mean, you can't do two, so give both of them chalitza. I mean, the same way if you would be married and you want to get rid of two wives, you'd have to give each one of them a get. You can't, so I'm going to give one of them a get. So then just give both of them chalitza. You can't do that either. Why not? Because it says, beit chalutza na'a. Where over there means the same thing. You can only give chalitza to one, and you don't give chalitza to two. Oh. Okay, great. So I got a wonderful idea. I can only do Yibum with one, and I can only do Chalitza with one. So if there's two, I should do Chalitza to one and Yibum to the other, right? I mean, again, I certainly can't just give a Ptur to one of them. It has to be a Ptur that will apply to both of them. So then Niyabim Lechada V'Nachlotz Lechada. So then it makes sense to do one Yibum and one Chalitza, and then everyone will be happy, right? I mean, it would seem to make more sense. So, says the Gemara, well, remember that it says, Im lo yachpotz, it says specifically, Im lo yachpotz ha'ish. So then, if he doesn't want to do the Yibum, then he does Chalitza. But does that not imply that only Im lo yachpotz ha'ish lakachat et yivim to? He doesn't want to, but if he would want to, he would certainly be able to. And there is where the pasuk continues to say, "Ve'alta yevim toa shara lezekinim," and so on. And she starts saying, "No, me'ein yamila akim le'achiv shem." But over here, even if he wanted to, he wouldn't be allowed to, because you said he's not allowed to take two. So im lo yachpots, meaning hachafet yabim. And from there, we came out with our famous yisod of kol ha'ole le'yibum, ole le'chalitza. Because she'in ole le'yibum, in ole le'chalitza. Now, even though we have had cases where that clearly is not true, it's only not true because of some problem. A drabanan iser, or a case where this woman is unable to talk, so she's a cheresh, or he's a cheresh. In other words, there are external problems, but there are not innate problems. So innately, theoretically, if everything would be okay, he would be able, this is how Tosfos explains, he would be able to give the Yibum to this person, but because of outside issues, he can't. Okay. So, but the general klal, kosher eino ola liyibum, eino ola lachalitza. So we've already proven to you from the pasuk, once you do yibum, you're not allowed to do another yibum. So then it's telling me that therefore you don't give her chalitza either. So we have the unavoidable understanding that the Torah indeed is allowing one act to pater both. And not only that, I mean, even if you would want to say that the idea over here is that, look, it could be that maybe, in fact, it wouldn't hurt to give chalitza. But it's worse than that. We don't want you to do chalitza after yibum because of another reason. A gezera, people might say, well, look at that. That guy died leaving two wives. I guess one of them wasn't good enough, you know. It was a house that was partially built through yibum, but the other one was thrown out, and that one was actually chalutz. So this is not a real bona the bayit. No, so they'll say. So what do you care? The Yomru, let them say. Let people talk. They always talk anyway. So what's the difference? Ah, because, you see, if we could be sure that first you would do Yibum and then you would do Chalitza to the other one, you could say that. Let them talk. Fine. The problem is that once we would allow such a situation to be common where you would do Chalitza to one and Yibum to the other, and obviously you could only do it in the direction of Yibum first and then Chalitza, because if you did the Chalitza first, then you wouldn't be allowed to do Yibum, because, as it says, Kivan Shelo Banah Shuv Lo Yivnez, we're going to show. So therefore, we finally get to that Makkah, and that is, if indeed we could be certain that you would be first Miyabim, and then you would give Chalitza to the other one, Hachinami, there would be no problem. But we're worried. If you go ahead and you do chalitza, and then you want to be miyabim, you've got a problem. Because it says, asher lo yivneh et beit achiv. Asher lo yivneh, what do you mean asher lo yivneh? Asher lo banah, no? No. Once he was not boneh, he'll never be boneh. But why not? He always wanted to do yibum to the other wife. Oh, too bad, buddy. Asher lo yivneh. You took one of these wives to chalitza, you're never going to have an opportunity to be bona this bias. And therefore, since it's possible that someone would first do chalitza believing that he can then do yibum, we don't allow chalitza and yibum in the same home in any order. Because it's possible to get stuck, and if you do in the wrong order, you're going to be over in a lot. Because then you would be take shuv lo yivneh is basically lo yivneh in the future. Okay, I got this. But now I have another problem. Because up until now, I viewed the situations in the pasuk as defining the actual mitzvah. So in other words, where a situation occurs, that's the place where the Torah is discussing the mitzvah. If that situation could never occur, then the Torah is not discussing that situation, right? So then why don't I say, if you have one yevama that falls, and you can deal with that one yevama, because, I mean, you know, the way you're ending up explaining the pasuk, it's screwy. Because how do you explain it? If, in fact, these women require a heter from the original marriage, so why is it going to be different than gerushin? The original marriage, if he had two wives, he couldn't get rid of both wives with one act, except shooting himself through the head, but then that wouldn't be his act, basically. So the problem is, if now the Yibum is supposed to be acting as if you are in locum the brother, how could you take care of both wives with one act? I don't get it. I mean, it just violates your simple, innocent understanding of the situation. So now if you're going to explain the pasuk, the best way to explain the pasuk is, even for Alon and even in Sesame Street, the best way to explain the situation would be for Mr. Grouch to say, look, you're 100% right about the understanding of this pasuk, and therefore the reasonable conclusion to any normal person would be that the Torah is saying, where does there come to be a mitzvah of Yibum in the Torah when there is only one Yavama? But since I've made it impossible for you to deal with two Yavamas, because you're never going to be able to, then what that implies is that if I can't apply this din to a case with two Yavamas, the Torah was never mechayev you to worry about two Yavamas. They don't fall to Yibum. The only place where you have a mitzvah of Yibum is where you have one Yavama, everything is straight, and the Torah says over there, you've got a choice, do Yibum or do Chalitza. But in a case where the Torah is not giving you a choice, so then it's obviously not being mechayev you. That makes more sense. And then we don't end up with this absurdity of saying that you, a brother, in taking over a brother's home, can somehow do more than the brother himself can do and get rid of both of his wives with one act. That don't make sense to me. So therefore, ve'ema, ki ika chada titkayim mitzvat yibum, bar ki ika tarte lo titkayim mitzvat yibum. Now, these are all such fundamental questions, and each one of them sheds light on the interrelationship that Zika has with the brother, right? And it makes it so much more detailed. So what actually is going on when a surviving brother takes over the previous brother's relationship? And on the one hand, we're calling it a bayit for each one of those women. And yet on the other hand, we're treating the entire bayit as if it's a single entity. I mean, it seems almost a contradiction in terms. If you're telling me bayit echad u'boneh is a reference to one woman, so then how do you understand beit achiv as nonetheless meaning the entire bayit can be dealt with in dealing with either of the women? I mean, you can't have it both ways, can you? And that's how you're bringing it out. So, says the Gemara, well, I could, and I would have, except then it occurred to me, but wait a minute. Do I not have a pasuk in the Torah about litzror and or v'yibma? And that taught me that there's a din of tzarat erva? Well, how would there be a tzarat erva? If wherever there are two women, there's no din of yibum, so then there will never be yibum in a case of two women. Why do I start talking about if one of them is an erva? There ain't going to be no one of them is an erva, because this is not a case that the Torah called beit achiv. Beit achiv means a brother who is married to one woman. That's the way that we would have understood it. So now all of a sudden we start hearing about tzaras. There's no tzaras, because there's no yibum if there's more than one wife. Ha! So therefore, it must be that we're treating the bayit as an entity, even though, on the other hand, we look at the word bayit as referring to a particular woman. What can I do? Wait a minute. I don't understand the logic in that. That's crazy to me. If you've got an erva, then you only have one wife, darn it. Because the erva doesn't fall to yibum, no matter what. Because obviously there's no way for you to take the erva. So then cut the erva out of this, okay? A classic bar mitzvah. So cut the erva out of this. And therefore, I would have said, look, the erva is out of the question. We use that word in Hebrew, abroi kaima. She's out of the discussion, okay? Abroi means she's out. She's out of the discussion. So now, for all intents and purposes, you only have one wife. So now, okay, so now what's the din of the erva? Big chiddush, says the Torah. Well, it's not that easy. If the reason that there's only one wife is because she's an erva, then you can't marry either wife. Now, you're telling me that's not a chiddush? The din of tzara? It's an incredible chiddush. Wow. Okay, so then that would be the point. But, I mean, how would that tell us that we don't have a right to say that the mitzvah of Yibum only applies in cases where there's one, literally one, not one plus an erva, and that's a whole new thing. Okay? So, alam alam, why don't I need a pasuk to tell me that an erva creates tzaras erva? Yitzrich. Sa'ka da'it chamina. Erva abroi kaima. So only go ahead and do yibum to the tzara. Kamashma the Torah needs to tell me no. In that case, you can't do yibum to tzara. Oh, okay, that's true. So, all right, let's say a whole different shot. Ela. Now I have a new approach. Since it says in the pasuk, "Vim lo yachpotza ish lakachat et yivimto," the altar yivimto. Now, what is this yivimto? Yivimto. Why are we yivimtoing it up over here? Why Now, the truth is, of course, we already used this pasuk, remember, before, to talk about chayvei lavim. Okay, so this is a bit crazy. Why are we reusing the pasuk to tell me that if you say the word yevim to twice, it's got to mean that there's are two yevamas. And that is a clear proof that we do not limit the mitzvah of yevam to a single yevama, because the pasuk specifically mentions two yevamas. But we needed this pasuk to talk about yisr lav. The answer, my friends, is that there are two separate issues over here. One is the repetitive yevimto, but the other is why yevimto at all? What's wrong with the pronoun? Ve'alta hashara, right? Or im lo yachpotza ish lakachat ota. What do I need to get yevimto bichlal? So in other words, I could use a pronoun twice over here. Ve'alta hashara, that's all. If you're throwing, first of all, the question is, why does it mention two cases? The other question is, why use the word yevimto twice where neither of them are needed? So therefore, it's coming to tell me there may be a case of two yevamas. Two yevamas, but I thought you said that the only time we have yevam is if there's only one yevama. I was wrong. Okay, so here's the answer. That's the Ella. So since it says yevimto, yevimto, that teaches us the correct approach to the pasuk is not to say that the pasuk is limiting the mitzvah of yevam to a case where there's only one, and therefore, we're stuck with this unlikely outcome that on the one hand, the relationship of a surviving brother is to the brother, deceased brother's family. And yet, within the context of that family, each one of the members of that family is koveya a different halacha, despite the fact that her ultimate status is defined in terms of the bayit as a whole. So that means that we have this basic multiple meaning throughout the story of Yevam with the relationship of a Yevama and her Tzora. And no wonder that this was part of the intense involvement that we had from the very opening of the Masechet to the interrelationship between two women, which is learned out from, as I cannot stop stressing because it's so beautiful, is learned out dafka from Achot Isha, where the problem is two women that are getting on each other's nerves, to say the least. And that is a very unique erva because it's being only limited by the actual presence rather than the blood relationship. It turns out that the whole meaning of Yibum, the interrelationship between women, is predicated on that, not only Tzoras Erva. Remarkable. All right, so here we're getting into the underlying issues, which, of course, as the Maharsha says, that's exactly what we don't talk about Barabim, but which need to be understood in less than Shlosha. Haita achat kshera. Okay, so then we have this last beautiful piece. If you have one woman who is kosher, if you're going to do chalitza, don't do chalitza with her. Do chalitza with the pasul. And as we saw twice before, Omer of Yosef, Kan Shana Rebbe, Lo Yishpoch Adam Meboro, V'Acherim Tzrichim Lahem. Never throw out a dishwasher. Okay, next Mishnah, which brings us to Sir Richard. there we go. Excellent. By the way, just to mention to the Gabbai of the Rebbe, sometimes it's necessary to raise one's voice in these wake-up calls. And I note that we are missing a Rebbe. So, continues the next Mishnah. Hamachzir grushato. So now, we're going to take a look indeed at the relationship between a grusha and a chalutza in a very strange way. Because somebody who goes ahead and he remarries his divorcee after she married somebody else. Now, that is a lav in the Torah. But he goes and he does it anyway. Or he marries his chalutza. Well, he's not allowed to marry his chalutza because we just had kivan shelo bana shuv lo yivneh, right? So he's not allowed to marry his chalutza. That's an iser d'oraisa. It's not an iser kares, but it's an iser lav. Vehanose krovat chalutzato, or somebody who marries his chalutza's sister, let's say. Well, that was only derabbanan, right? We treated the chalutza midrabbanan as if she's the equivalent of a grusha. Well, unbelievably. Yotziv Avalad Mamzer. What? Well, somehow or other, it says in all of these cases, the child of such a union would be a Mamzer. I mean, I can excuse Rabbi Akiva, Divrei Rabbi Akiva, because maybe he holds like the Shita. Remember, there are three Shitot about how to define a Mamzer. The result of a union between an Israelav, a, okay, that's Rabbi Akiva Shita. The result of a union between Yisrael Karet, okay, that's Shimon HaTimni's Shita, or we have Rabbi Yoshua Shita. Only a relationship between Chayavei Mitot. But if it's not a Chi of Mitot, it does not produce a Mamzer. But certainly there's no such thing as a Drabbanan, as Rabbi Akiva is saying. Somebody who marries Achot Chalutzato is going to create a Mamzer. Sure. All right, the Gemara obviously is going to be dealing with this question. The Chachamim Omrim, no, ain't a Vlad Mamzer in any of those cases, because none of them are an Isser Karet. But the Chachamim are Meida, that in the case where he would marry his Krovat Rushato, so if he had divorced a wife, and now he goes ahead and he wants to marry the sister, and he says, well, I already got rid of your sister, so we don't have to worry about Litzror. Oh, no, only the death of the sister allows him to marry the sister. Or, for that matter, if he would try to marry her mother. All of the arayas that are related to a wife does not mean a current wife. It means she who once was your wife, who is still alive, including even Achot. So, therefore, if he goes ahead and he takes the Krovat Grushato, that's an Isser Kares, like it always was. The Gerushin did not impact the Isser Karet at all. So there the Chachamim Rameda, that the child indeed is a Mamzer. Now, how does Rabbi Akiva say, Sova Rabbi Akiva no se krovat chalutzato avlad Mamzer? It doesn't make any sense. How did Rabbi Akiva say such a thing? Didn't we say in the Mishnah before that we just had 3 days ago, Omer Reish Lakish, by making the difference between whether there is still a chiev to give chalitza. So Omer Reish Lakish, there's a difference between the Achot Chalutza and Achot Grusha. And that was brought out beautifully where an Achot Grusha falls to a brother or an Achot Chalutza falls to a brother. The Achot Chalutza requires chalitza. So Kan Shana Rebbe, Achot Grusha is midivrei Torah, and Achot Chalutza is midivrei Seferim, and obviously an Issa Drabbanan can't create a Mamzer, so how would Rabbi Akiva say such a thing? Well, says the Gemara, we got to change the Mishnah. You're right, that's outrageous. It must be it's talking about someone who marries Krovat Grushato, not Krovat Chalutzato. And I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, read the Mishnah. The Mishnah goes on to say, Okinami Mistara, because the Seifa says that the Chachomim Rameda, that if he was Noisei Krovat Grushato, Shavlad Mamzer. Why would they say a crazy statement like that if we never even discussed a case like that? I mean, you don't have the Chachomim coming along, well, we're Moda in that case. We're even Moda in that case. We never talked about that case. So obviously, we did talk about that case. Where did we talk about that case? Because the Mishnah was misrepresented here. The Mishnah said Achot Chalutzato, which is absurd. So therefore, the correct Girsa is Achot Grushato, and the Mishnah would then clarify, by the way, there is one case of the above listed three cases that the Chachamim are made in, and that is the Achot Grushato, because that is an Isser Karet. The other two are not an Isser Karet. They're an Isser Lav of Kivan Shalobona, Shuvlo Yivin, or whatever, but certainly not an Isser Karet. But if you're going to tell me that we never discussed that case, the Amrit Loai Riba, and that in fact we were talking about the Achot Chalutza, then why are we discussing whether they're modim or not? Well, I don't know. That doesn't prove anything to me. I mean, maybe the Mishnah is just telling us that you should know that the Chachomim agree that Yesh Mamzer Michaive Kritut, which is Achot Grushato, but they were only arguing on Rabbi Akiva about whether Yesh Mamzer Michaive Lavim. Well, first of all, I mean, I don't understand. That is a Beferish Mishnah later on. Why do I need to bring that up now? The Mishnah later says Beferish, which we're going to see late next week, that Yesh Mamzer, Michaev Krisus. It says over there, Ezeu Mamzer, Kol She'er Basar Shu Belo Yavo. According to Rabbi Akiva, it's an Isser Lav. Rabbi Shimon Atimni Omer Kol She'er Chayov and Alav Karet Bidei Shamayim. And as we mention every time we bring up Rabbi Shimon. Is he a Taimani or is he a Timni? Now, Rashi claimed that he's not a Taimani and that he comes from the city of Timna, which, of course, is a very suggestive city in this issues, as those of our Shimshon discussion will remember. But anyway, so he comes from Timna. So he's a Timni. But it's very interesting that the Yavet, who just happens to be an old grandpa of mine, says that, no, it's got to be HaTeimani. And the reason it's got to be HaTeimani seems to be quite clear. Because wherever we bring a Lashon of a person who comes from a particular city, we always say Ish X, right? So we have an Ish Yerushalayim, or what, all of those special cases. So we should have said Ish Timna. Why are we saying HaTimni? Wherever we use the Lashon HaTimni, it's always a reference to an area. Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. We don't say from a particular city, right? Nitai HaArbeli. That's not a city. That's an area of the Arbel. And so on and so forth. Every time you'll find someone coming from an area or a city, Hillel HaBavli, it's always going to be the Bavli. So therefore, Taimani is Taimani, not Timni. Anyway, so now it would appear, according to this, the correct Nusach over here would be to read Shimon HaTaimani. Okay, fine. Whatever it is, as I said, Rashi says it's HaTimni. So according to Shimon HaTimni, the Halach is kosher chayov and of course bidei shamayim, and that's how we paskin. So if the Mishnah says that, why would we need to say it over here? Well, because maybe we wanted to make a Stam Mishnah that says Rabbi Shimon HaTimni. And so then why would we pick, of all crazy cases, why would we pick the Ma'akrovat Grushato? We could pick any of the Chayvei Krisis. So it must be that we were talking about this case. No, no, of course not. The Omer Liolam Lo Ayriba makes perfectly good sense to talk about this case, because before we were talking about the case of Marzer Grushato and somebody who marries Chalutzato and Krovat Chalutzato, not Grushato. So therefore, we taught the similar case that the Rabbanan Ramayda, in a similar case, which is Achot Grushato, that of course, over there, that would be a Mamzer because we all have Shimon HaTeimani. There we go. All right. So, you know what? I'm going to take it the way it's written in the Mishnah. I'm going to change the Mishnah. Here's what is written. What's written is Krovat Chalutzato. Now, go ahead and explain it. How could Krovat Chalutzato be a Mamzer? You want me to bite the bullet? Then I need to understand it. So Krovat Chalutzato to Rabbi Akiva is a Mamzer. But how? Omer Rabbi Barav, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, I'll tell you how. Hainu time to Rabbi Akiva. The Omer Kro Beit Chalutzanal. The Pusik calls the Chalutza a Bayit. And that must mean that it's a wife. This is the wife who is Chalutza now. So it's saying that she is the equivalent of a divorcee from the Yavam. This is yet a third meaning of Bayit. The first, it was the Bayit, the whole home. Then it was the Bayit, the particular Isha of the deceased. Now it becomes the Bayit in terms of the Yavam, which of course is the simple meaning of the Pasuk, the Beit Chalutza now. Okay, anyway, so now we're saying that she has a din of his wife as if she got a divorce. So then that means that Rabbi Akiva is chalek on the basic assumption of our Mishnah, the opening of the Perek, Rabbi Isai. That's what's so astounding here. Until now, we've taken for granted. There's a major difference between a chalutza who falls from another brother and an actual case of a gerusha. So we said the difference is that one of them needs, in fact, chalitza. Comes along this Mishnah to say to us, not according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Akiva, there is absolutely no need for chalitza. She just goes straight out and marries whoever she wants, because according to Rabbi Akiva, chai ve'lavin are the same as an erva. And therefore, since Kedushin are not Toif Sin and Chai Ve'lavin, according to Rabbi Akiva, there is a din of Tzaras Erva, and the whole thing, therefore, would be Potter. Om Rav Yezev, Om Rav Shimon Barebi. Hakol Modim B'Marzer Grushato, Shavlat Pagum Lekuna. Even though we sort of made it clear that she may not be a mamzer, because you don't know of Rabbi Akiva, and it's only an Isser Lav, but everybody agrees that the child is definitely not allowed to marry into the kuna. The child over here refers to a daughter. There is no Isser of a boy marrying into the kuna, because there's no concept of a halal or something being usser to a woman who is a bas kohen. So it's referring to a girl, and it has no impact on the status of a male. So when you say hakol modim, who do you mean? Shimon HaTemani, even though Shimon HaTemani / Timni holds Ein Mamzer Michaive Lavim. And therefore, you would say, okay, so she's not a Mamzer, so she's okay, right? Not okay. Nihida Mamzer Lohavi, but she's certainly a Pogum. Why is she a Pogum? Because of Kal V'chomer. Look, a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a widow, right? Everybody else is allowed to marry a widow. Even a Kohen can marry a widow, no problem marrying a widow. And yet, what's the din? If an almana le Kohen Gadol that applies to precisely one person in the whole world and to no one else, namely the Kohen Gadol. Nonetheless, the Torah says, beferush, that if he does marry such a woman, lo yechalel zar'o, his child will be ruined. For the kuna, okay? So then if that's the case, if even over there where any zrash of a bakol but not pagum, kol shekein, this case where everybody is prohibited from remarrying a divorcee after she's been married to somebody else, so for sure her child should be pagum lekuna. No. Don't like that kal v'chomer at all, because it's different over there. It says beferush that an almana who marries a Kohen Gadol, she herself becomes a halala. How do I know that? Because it says lo yechalel instead of lo yechal. So lo yechalel means he's going to cause two chilulim, one of her and one of the child. Masha enkein, you can't say that about a divorcee. The divorcee doesn't become a halala. She's psula for the kuna because she's a divorcee. Everybody knows that. So she was already psula for the kuna, and therefore it doesn't do a darn thing to her by taking her. The only impact would be on the child. And how can you then bring a kal v'chomer from a case in which he does have an impact on her? Sorry, it's not a kal v'chomer. That's my first reason for saying that your argument makes no sense. I have another reason for saying your argument makes no sense, because God doesn't like your argument. He doesn't know. It says beferish in the pasuk, in the case of a machzir grushato. What does it say? Toeva, he. Aha. He and only he is a toeva. But the banim are not toavim. So the pasuk came right out and said, I have no objection to the offspring of such a marriage. I just don't like this marriage, okay? That's the second reason your argument is no good. And there's yet another reason why your argument is no good. And that's because it says in the Braita, Hamachzir Grushato, somebody takes back his divorced wife after her marriage to someone else. Or Hanosei Chalutzato. Or Hanosei Krovat Chalutzato. So Rabbi Akiva says, in all of these cases, there is no Kiddushin, because as we've seen, all of them are Isurim of Echaive Lav. And in all of these cases, therefore, you do not need a get, because there never was a kedushin. But he psula uvlada pasul, if the child is pasul, and that's because according to Rabbi Akiva, apparently it's a mamzer, whereas the chachomim say, no, there is kedushin, because it's only a chayiv lav, or even a drabbanan, according to them. And you do need a get, because the kedushin is chal. And she remains kshera, because there was no iser of Chorus over here, and please read carefully, and Vlada Kasher. Okay, now, I'm asking you, when you say Vlada Kasher, what do you think it's talking about? Vlada Kasher to a Yisrael or to a Kohen? Obviously, Vlada Kasher has got to mean to the Kahuna, no? Why? Maybe Vlada Kasher means Kasher to the Kahal, meaning to a Yisrael, but not to the Kahuna. Oh, really now? So then when it says Vlada Kasher, if you're talking about that the Vlad Apostle were meant over there, then what would be, it would mean, Ihochi, when it says that she is Kshera. She is Kshera, and the child is Kshera. So what does it mean? That she's Kshera LeKahal? What a stupid statement that would be. Of course she's a Kshera LeKahal. A woman cannot become Apostle to anyone but a Kohen. unless she's born of an illicit union. You can't become puzzle by having sex with somebody. There's only one way to become puzzle like that, to a Kohen. Over there, yes, it could be a zonah, halala, whatever. But there's no way to make someone puzzle ex post facto to birth. So of course it can't mean the kahal. So the kshera means, so what are you going to say? She's puzzle to the kahal pshita, kosher le kahal pshita. What? So because she's been playing around, so now she becomes puzzle to the kahal? That's an impossibility. Ela lav le kuhuna. And since when we're referring to she herself, we're talking about the kuna, then we're referring to the child, we're referring to the kuna. I mean, keep it even, don't you think? No, I don't think, actually. I don't think this proves a darn thing, because we might be using the word kishera in different ways. In the case of she, where it could only apply to the Kohen, it means to the Kohen. In the case of the Vlad, where it could apply to the Kahal as a whole, because over there might be problems of Mamzerut, over there it means the Kahal. I know that that sounds weird, doesn't it? But if you think about it, I'm right. And I'll prove it to you. Okinami Mistavra. Look back at the first part in the Braita. What did it say over there in the Resha? There we were talking about Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva said, she is puzzle, and the Vlad is puzzle. Okay, go ahead. Try to show me that the word puzzle over here is consistent in its use for her, and its use for the Vlad. I dare you. When it says she is puzzle, who is she puzzle to? To the Kahal? There's no such thing. You can't become puzzle because of illicit sexual activities. There's no such thing. So Mishum Dezania, Ifsula la Kahal, when did she become puzzle? That's absurd. So that means when it says that she is puzzle, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva, you're talking about she's puzzle to the kahuna, right? Okay, because you can become a zayna to the kahuna. But when it says the vlad is puzzle, what does it mean over there? To the kahuna? But she's kosher to the kahal? Excuse me? Didn't Rabbi Akiva say the vlad is a mamzer? So then that means the word puzzle is applied as necessary to the context, puzzle to the kahal, because the vlad is a mamzer. She is not puzzle to the Kahal. She is puzzle to the Kohen. So are you ready to accept the undeniable fact that the word puzzle in the Resha is contextual? Thank you. So then the word kosher in the Sefer is just as likely to be contextual. So don't look at me like I'm weird. If anybody's weird, it's the one who can't figure out the Sefer from the Resha. So therefore, Sefer Nami, Hakereita, Vahakereita, each one is contextual. Therefore, this last piece of your arguing against my Raya, I don't find persuasive. Now I'm going to go back and talk about your other two reasons for not agreeing with me. The last, the penultimate one was what? That the Torah says, Toeva hi. Hi Toeva ve'ein banea Toevim. No, that's wrong. You jump to conclusions. Maybe it's hi Toeva ve'ein sarata Toeva. But maybe the banim are Toevim. So we had that possibility before, that it means that the tzara is actually allowed to be mityabemet if she falls now to a brother. And the fact that this brother had remarried his divorcee does not pass on the tzara. Thank you. That there goes your second reason for not agreeing with me. And now you've got one reason left. Aha. Okay. One reason out of three. And what was that? The fact that if we try to learn it out from the Almanah, there's a way to prove that it's not a Kal Vachomer by showing that you do not posler in this case, but by the Almanah ken yatzma mitchalelet. Okay, so I accept that. I'm going to actually say it in a different way, okay? Here's what I mean to say. What was originally said was like this. Omer Rav Yosef, Omer Rav Shimon bar Rebbe. Let's not talk about the case of the Isser over here of the Lav. Instead, I will say, even those who disagree about a status of Mamzerus agree about a status of a Psula Kahuna in the event that someone slept with an Isser Karet. Now, when we're talking about over here, everybody is Moda. We mean, even Rabbi Yeshua, who disagrees with Shimon HaTemani, and he says there is no such halacha that any offspring of an illicit union, meaning a union of karet, creates a mamzer. It's not true. only someone who is an offspring of an illicit relationship that is a chiyuv of Misa. Only Misa is a mamzer. That would mean that all of these other cases of mamzeres do not apply, but I agree that Nihida mamzer lohavi, it definitely is a pogum, and that I know from a kavah chomer for the almanah. If an almanah l'kohen gadol, which is a very limited isra, and isra shavah because only one person in the world, nonetheless, creates bina pogum, as it says, befer shlo yichal el zaro. This woman, the Yisrkaris, where everybody has that Yisr, Yisr HaShavebiko, so for sure, ain't a dinshe b'na pagum. Now, what are you going to tell me? Ah, wait a minute, Amara Kohen Gadol is different, because it says Yechalel, and that means she herself becomes psula. Well, same thing is true over here, my dear. If a person sleeps with an Yisrkarit, he turns her into a zonat in terms of the din of kuhuna, and therefore, it's exactly the same. Okay, Rabbeisai, so we have entered into very, very important issues today. We've gotten to the primal basis in the pasuk of the strange interrelationship of the various wives that will fall to Yibum simultaneously, even interrelationships between various batim and the Eitz HaTeva. We've come to recognize the society's stake in a Yibum relationship, which we should have figured out on our own from the whole incredible story of Malchus Beis David and the idea of the relationship between Ruth and Naomi and the way the entire city gets involved in this and ultimately the entire nation gets involved in this. And this becomes later on the issue of Doeg Adomi and the questioning of, well, was this really a suitable relationship and so on. And then that means that strangely, what we never understood before in terms, we kept things very, very childishly naive. Is the mitzvah of Yibum Adiv? Is the mitzvah of Chalitza Adiv? And we have the machlokas of Abashol and the Chachamim. All of a sudden we find out, well, I mean, it's also a question of the particular relationships, isn't it? And therefore we need to have the Besdin speaking to this guy personally. Oh my gosh. So you mean, all along, it wasn't just a binary issue. It was actually quite complex, which was why we left the binary to get to the four brothers in the first place, which shows you that things are seldom what they seem. And in fact, maybe one of these women is appropriate, and one of them is not, and one of them is too old, or one of them is too young. I don't know. So whatever the situation is, will be addressed by the Beis Din. And then we got to recognize three different levels that we're talking about, the nature of the bayit in the context of Yibum / Chalitza, in which suddenly Chalitza becomes the mukkah of all the different ways that we take a look at Yibum. The kivan shelo bana shuv lo b'yineh is a din in Chalitza. And the idea of bayit echad u'boneh, even though that's a din in Yibum, it's only learned from Chalitza. And the question of whether it's called Yevimto, even if there are two, so then at Chalitza, that's where we learn it from, even though it defines the nature of Yibum. These are all immense chidushim that revise the entire way that we relate to the primary psukim in the parsha, and therefore we can feel that at last, having a whole parak over here of Chalutzato, we're beginning to understand what an impact of Chalutzato is. Pow! Amazing day. What can I tell you? Okay, see you then. A wonderful beginning to the Sfiras HaOmer, which ends with a Yibum, and not with a Chalitza on the happy day of Shavuos, but we'll get to that later, Bezrat Hashem. Wishing you all Moadim L'Simcha, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason, with much love, which of course is what Yibum is all about. See you all then later.